Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you were listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, here we are again, another episode of This Life with Dr. Drew and Bob.
Here we are, and we have a special guest today. It's Doug Bobst. He is a behavior change specialist, precision nutrition, certified nutrition coach. He's got several books. The Heart of Recovery is the current book. I believe From Felony to Fitness to Free is one of the other books, and Faith, Family, Fitness is another. And you have some.
Yeah, is this the thing that you interviewed me for, this book? Because we don't physically have the book. We just have the details of the book.
Yeah, this is the one I interviewed you for, which, by the way, I need to get one question from you.
Okay.
It's coming out in March.
Nate, listen, one question. What is it?
I don't have it in front
let's
of me.
Let's do, but what he does is he goes around and asks all these recovery people these eight questions, right? Uh-huh. And is compiling and seeing the comparisons of the different what motivates someone.
Interesting.
Right?
Yeah.
And it was fascinating to me. And so, who are some of the people else that you interviewed?
I mean, I don't want to delve too much into it until it comes out, but I've interviewed some pretty diverse group of people, from musicians to celebrities to TV personalities. And I mean, the reason I wanted to showcase just different people and that addiction recovery just doesn't discriminate whether you're worth $10 or $10 million, you still got to do the right thing. And that's just really why I wrote the book. And the other vision too, is I didn't get sober in AA. I got sober when I was incarcerated through the help of my cellmate. And organically, I just, you know, I found fitness. I found changing my friends. I found, you know, moving away. And that really helped me. And I just wanted to show that there's different paths to recovery than just AA. And while I respect it, I just think there's other ways to get sober, whatever way works for
well,
people.
And then we had talked. So how long were we incarcerated for? 2 years?
No, my sentence was 5 years. I was only incarcerated a little less than 90 days.
Oh, okay. That's the modern sentencing, Drew,
right,
that you love so much.
California. So, you know, when you
he was
say,
taken out of his life for 90 days, so
right.
That's like going to rehab.
Right, right.
He met a guy that he listened to.
Which is basic foundation.
Attachment.
Right.
Right,
yep.
Trust.
It's new right. pair of glasses.
Right, and then but the thing, Doug, that's amazing about your story is you stay sober after you get out. That's what most people don't do, whether it's out of rehab or out of jail or out of the predicament they were in. Somehow, addiction is so powerful, you inevitably will be pulled back into the same old behaviors and the same old things unless you make a conscious decision not to. And are vigilant
right.
about that decision, right?
Yeah.
So what,
yeah,
what I see is there's new stories coming out, but they fit the old stories.
Yes, yes, that's right.
Right.
That's right. That when it's at its most fundamental, it's brains change other brains. At its most fundamental.
And did you stay in touch with that guy that was your bunk mate, or did you find new people to hang out with and do the health and fitness? And what did you do coming out of jail?
Well, you know, coming out of jail, I cried. I never thought I would cry leaving jail. Like, I didn't want to go because this guy had changed my life. And I just always asked him, I said, man, how can I ever repay you? And he just said, keep paying it forward. And I didn't really know what that meant at that point. And he gave me a workout plan that I still have framed in my place today, so I don't forget where I came from. And I got out, and him helping me, like, really doing that in jail, like, I didn't want to let him down. So for a few months, that was really my motivation. And we would write letters to each other. You know, he would still encourage me. And then once I got to a point fitness-wise where I'd lost a bunch of weight, is really when I wanted to get certified as a trainer to help other people. And I stayed in contact with him a little bit. We actually worked out together when he got out, but he went back into jail, was in and out, and you know, we still stay in touch here and there, but I, you know, I think he's back. He's back in the sauce.
Okay,
so
right,
I try
there.
To stay away.
So understand, so you haven't had the 12-step experience that I have and Drew has witnessed, right? So it's the same thing, Doug.
Same thing.
It's the same thing. He was your sponsor. He was your Eskimo. He didn't make it.
Right.
Right?
Right.
A lot of the people that helped me, the guy who I had my first day sober with, Michael, I won't say his last name, is still not sober 23 years later. Mm-hmm. Do you understand? But he was... If it wasn't for him, I would be dead. That's what really happens in this mysterious thing of addiction and recovery, right? And so you've written a book about the alternative ideas, and I always see them as kind of the same thing. Like you find somebody that you really respect, you hit a spot emotionally, physically, spiritually, financially, some lee that you can't accept. I could accept... financial ruin didn't bother me. I could accept homelessness didn't bother me. I could accept relationships ending didn't bother me. But incarceration bothered me tremendously.
Loss of freedom.
Yeah. Loss of freedom.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely. And yeah, and also when I went to court, the judge had given me, you know, 5 years and suspended everything but 90 days and gave me the 5 years probation. But he said if I completed everything without messing up, he would take the felony conviction off my record. Mm. And I really didn't know the power of that because when I was 20, when I got sentenced, I didn't think I was going to make it to see 25. Mm. But the more I kept going, the more I realized, man, I can actually try and do this. I can like do the unthinkable, the unimaginable. Because nobody believed in me. I didn't really believe in myself. But I just know if I didn't believe in myself, I wasn't going to make it. So I just kept faking it till I made it. And you know, I wanted to really inspire myself so I could inspire other people to help change their lives. And that's kind of what was my real big motivation in making it this long.
So your story sounds like there was some major childhood trauma. So what happened?
So, you know, growing up, my parents got divorced when I was 5, and I didn't take it so well.
Nobody does.
Yeah, nobody does.
Right, and I got depressed at a young age. I started eating unhealthy. I love sports, but I was never the kid who could run or jump. So I knew I wasn't going to make it in sports. And I started getting made fun of when I was, you know, in grade school a lot. And, you know, I turned to food. And when I was 14, I started smoking pot. And while I don't think it's not necessarily a gateway drug for everyone, it certainly was for me. I felt this numbing. I felt like I could be comfortable in my own skin, and then one thing led to the next, and
it's still there's still something
so real that, to you yeah, when but, you describe it. It's revivified. I can see it in your eyes, just well, over a bad computer screen,
right?
Like I can see that you were really that little boy that couldn't jump and couldn't compete, right?
But I also see, you know, the need for numbing at 13, 14. There's some more trauma than just a divorce. I don't know if you're comfortable talking about it, but something else bad happened.
Well, I think just being bullied and picked on and told I looked like I had Down syndrome as a kid, you know,
that's
was just
brutal.
Even though like
children
I didn't,
are just
you know,
brutal, Drew. Let's face it.
I had no luck with women because I was heavier, so I wasn't as attractive as I thought I was. So my self confidence and self esteem was nothing. And
but again, that's all. You know, that's you're still describing the consequences.
Drew's
of trauma.
Going for sexual abuse. I'll just shorthand
well,
for you.
Well, just you know, kids that are sort of vulnerable at age 5 to 7, when there's been a divorce, they look for attention and love, and the pedophiles take advantage. That's sort of typical.
Yeah, I mean, to my knowledge, nothing happened. I mean, I know there was a rumor that something had happened, but there's no proof. You know,
but you were a part of it. How is it a rumor if you were a part of it? You dissociated it. You don't remember it.
Well, I mean, somebody had told me they had witnessed something or they had heard something happen, but I don't remember it. My mom doesn't remember it. You know, so I don't really want to say something happened if I don't physically remember it, but
well,
for all intents and purposes, something could have happened.
Oh, you came
to
the right place, yeah. Douglas.
You see, those things don't have to have memory attached to it. They often don't. They typically don't. They leave an effect on how your brain's organized, and that's why all the acting out and stuff, and that's why a relational closeness was so powerful for you.
That was genuine and not exploitive.
Right.
Right.
And that's how people heal when they've been traumatized like that.
Yeah, I mean, my cellmate was the first person that I can really remember, like, who wasn't part of my family that authentically really cared about me and took me under his wing and was, you know, and I, it was like, I never knew. I was like, why'd you pick me? And then, you know, now I know I had a purpose in my despair. And that's why I keep doing what I'm doing today.
But why'd you pick me is the classic thought of the kid that's being abused. Yeah. Why'd you pick me? And so, you know, that's sort of a classic statement. So when it worked in the other direction, again, it was that same feeling. Why'd you pick me?
And the interesting thing is, so then you felt like pay it forward was be there for him when he got out. I imagine that was very disillusioning when he ended up going the wrong way and ended up back in prison. How did that feel?
I mean, it broke my heart because I just...
Didn't break your spirit, didn't break your belief in what he taught you.
Well, no, and I remember I dedicated my first book From Felony to Fitness to Free to him, and I told him that, and he's like, you know, you're my inspiration. He told me I was his inspiration, and I just said, you know, I'm not going to let you down, and, you know.
This is better than an AA sponsor relationship.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, you had
the best sponsor for anybody who wasn't in AA in the history of mankind.
Yeah.
This I mean, to be honest, it really taught me the importance of helping other people with no strings attached. Like, this guy had nothing to gain from helping me, and except maybe something in his heart. And for me, that's really what's helped me is through recovery, is helping people without, like, financial gain or without, like, wanting something in return. And I thank him for that.
Wow. So, and now what are you seeing in the new book in the parallels of all these different recovery stories? What did, after you compiled all these interviews, what did you see was so consistent a pattern in people's stories? What was it?
Well, I mean, there's different themes. And the reason I asked the question about what they do for the workout routine, because I believe as a trainer, working out is one of the most underutilized tools in recovery. I think people are sober, but they're not healthy. So I asked them about that. I asked them about their relationships, what types of people they hang out with, because I really think that, you know, you are the company you keep. Are you surrounding yourself with people that influence you to make better decisions or worse? And then I talk about their spirituality practices. I know Bobby went into spirituality and we talked about this stuff, but the common theme is these people who are doing it successfully are just doing something that works for them, but they're doing something. So fitness might not be the same for everybody. Spirituality might not be the same for everybody. Recovery might not be the same, but they're doing what works for them. And making sure that there's a common themes are they're doing something to get their body moving. They're hanging out with the right people. They're spiritually believing in something, or they believe in the importance of giving back and helping others.
Yeah. And the reason why
I just think that's all important.
The reason why I was excited to be involved is when you come from a 12-step perspective, the only success or failure you see is 12-step perspective.
Right.
What happens to the other 3 out of 5 people that don't go to 12 steps? And he's now interviewed some of them.
Right.
And it's interesting to see that my suspicion is they do the same things that 12-steppers do,
absolutely,
just in a different environment.
Absolutely.
Whether it's therapeutically with a good therapist or
you
found it through fitness.
Or
and
some
the other
combination.
The other thing is, you know, you've done fitness healthy. I can just see you. You're doing it healthily. There are so many people getting into fitness doing it unhealthy with steroids and obsessive exercise. And I wonder what – you must be around some of those people. What do you say to people that are not healthy yet obsessed with physical fitness?
Well, I'll say this. And to your first point about that they're doing the AA without really doing AA, I mean, I think organically for me, I've gone through the 12 steps. I went through the 12 steps probably 3 years ago just to see what they were, to familiarize myself with them. And I was like, well, I already know I have a problem with drugs. I already know that I believe in God. I know I have an inventory of all the things I've done wrong. I have no problem talking about it. I've made amends to my family and friends that I've hurt. And every day if I need help, I have mentors in my life that I surround myself with that I can call our sponsors, and I know the importance of giving back. So I totally agree with that, Bob. And as far as the second part, you know, I'm around a lot of people that take fitness like they make it their entire life.
I know.
And when I first got into recovery, it was a big part of my life, but now it's like, it's part of my life. It's not my life. I'm also very spiritual, and I believe in, you know, working, helping other people and, you know, having fun. And it's not just working out 3-4 hours a day at the gym. And because then it becomes a different obsession, right? You're just using vanity and attention and anything else to replace to get the same endorphin rush.
And I'll give you one
you
better.
Are from drugs.
The people I'm referring to are in the 12-step world too, Drew.
Right, of course.
They just become obsessed with their guns and their, you know, I was somewhere yesterday and I saw this guy and I just thought, what does it take to be 50 years old with arms like that? It must take 4 hours a day.
Takes a lot of drugs.
Drugs?
Yeah.
Steroids.
To get the big arms?
Oh, steroids. Oh, absolutely.
No, people get them naturally, don't they?
I'm as big as you can get without steroids. That's it.
Well, you'd need to be like 5 inches shorter.
I'm telling you, the steroid use is extremely
There are guys
common.
5 feet five who have arms like yours, and it looks so weird,
right? Trust me, it's very unusual.
So how rampant are steroids in the health and fitness world?
I mean, I think where I'm at, where I'm training a lot of people that are, you know, 40 to 50 moms, dads, business executives. It's not really as rampant there, but it is rampant, I'm sure, in the places where there's a lot of like bodybuilding competitions, you know, physique competitions. I'm sure in LA it's big. I mean, I was at a, you know, out in Venice, and I'm sure you could, at the Gold's Gym there, I'm sure it's rampant. But, you know, I think just like anything else, you know, people become obsessive over these things and they don't really beat that addictive personality. They just end up using something else, and that steroids can certainly be one of those things.
Right. And, you know, so what are you doing now? You're at a train station, I heard. Where are you going? Where are you at?
I'm in New York. There was a recovery film festival. There was one in L.A. There's one out in New York. Where
with Leonard?
Short...
Leonard? Michelle?
Leonard, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Leonard. Drew and I did that here in Santa Monica. We did it. Trust me.
Okay.
So there was like a 4 minute short documentary made about my story, and he wanted to show it at his film festival. So I made the trip from Baltimore to New York.
Cool.
And I'm at Penn Station, like hanging, I tucked away in the TGI Fridays in the back corner. So
cool. Well, did you have fun? Where'd they have it? Downtown?
East Village. They had it at a movie theater there. It was fun. It was nice. I mean, they showcased the film a little bit, and then they had me up there for a Q&A. And, you know, I got an interesting question. Somebody asked me, I don't get very political. I know we've had some interesting conversations, Bob, but like, they were like, do you think the government needs to do more to combat the opioid epidemic? And I said, listen, because they had already known what I was doing with my book. I said, out of the 50, 60, 70 people I've interviewed for my book, not one person got sober because of the government. I'll leave it at that.
Drew, right. What did I say this morning?
Right, that's exactly right. That's what you said. And I said the key is, though, to stop the prescribing, which they've done.
Oh, yeah.
So that's finally stopping. But
it's people. People help people. And people, you know,
of course.
That thing that you're describing has happened to, you know, now I have heard other people's stories outside of the 12-step world.
Well,
and it's very similar.
Well, where it gets
they all find a mentor. Often it's a grandpa.
Oh, interesting.
Right?
Where it gets complicated, though, is the you know, addiction exists in the context with other very complex psychiatric, psychological.
Well, everybody's
conditions.
So sick, though.
I know. And
you know what I mean?
Right. And so, you know, just dealing with the addiction is no longer the whole story with almost anybody.
Right.
Right.
But Susan has some Facebook questions, I think, right? Is that what you're saying?
What are some questions?
Well, first somebody said, Dr. Drew, why I might get into mental health. Thank you, Christian Sanchez. That was very nice. But under that, Betsy wanted to know do you think people who drink should go to jail on the third DWI?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but and I don't know how Doug feels, but what did you go to jail for, Doug?
Well, then Christian said, "I believe the first."
Oh my God!
I got busted with a half a pound of pot, $2,000 in
but
cash.
You had to have a pre-history of something to get 5 years. 5 years? Oh,
they gave me the maximum sentence. Well, the reason they gave me the maximum sentence is because he's like, "I'll give you the maximum sentence, but if you complete the probation, I'll strike the conviction off your record." So he took the felony off
my
record.
Was it drug court? Were you in drug court?
No, I was in circuit court.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
That guy knew what he was talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
Gave you enough rope to hang yourself.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and it wasn't – yeah, it doesn't – and it didn't – obviously, that's not for everybody, but for me, it really – he's like, if I see you again, you're sharing a cell with Bubba. And I was like, well, I knew my 5'8", you know, doughy – behind wasn't going to last more than 2 seconds in a cell with Bubba, so I didn't want to go back.
Well, you know, it's strange because now we're living in a time where drugs are legalizing right. and all kinds of things. Like if you were in Colorado, you'd be a hero having a pound of pot. So, and we're seeing this one thing that I got sober through the judicial system. You did. Other people, friends of mine have. It holds you accountable. It gives you enough rope to hang yourself or succeed and turn your life around.
I got
and
a now big
it, now it doesn't
I
exist.
I got in a big fight with that guy that thinks we should be legalizing everything. And I just simply said, you know, the guy that says, oh, the rats, if you put them in a playful environment, they don't want drugs.
Right.
You read that? What's his name? Help me.
A doctor, yeah.
No, he's not a doctor.
Oh, yeah. I know who you're Johanna Hari or whatever.
Yes. His name like that.
I have no idea who that is.
Well, the idea is that our studies are wrong, that rats won't kill themselves with drugs if you make their playpen really nice.
Right.
Right?
And he doesn't understand
the drug addict rats will kill themselves
right.
with cocaine.
You have to breed the drug addict rats. He doesn't get that.
He doesn't.
What's his name? Johanna?
It's like, yeah.
He wrote that book, Chasing the Scream, I think.
Sure. Let me see. But he really thought that the real problem is that we stigmatize people and we need to eliminate all laws against drugs and do what Portugal did and stuff, which I don't object to in its fundamental sense.
Well,
I said exactly what you said. I said, you know, having these things illegal helps us bring consequences, and we can leverage people into treatment that way, and into, you know, they sort of wake up. Oh my God, that's
shaming.
So destructive.
It's terrible.
Johan Hari, that's him. Yeah. Johan Hari.
Yeah. So everybody, at least people are talking about this stuff. My take is that getting 20 years in prison for pot is ridiculous. We have draconian laws.
Of course.
We need to adjust the laws to a more modern thing. We need to decriminalize some of the drugs. But your actions, you should always be held accountable for. So drunk driving, last time I checked, drinking is not illegal. Driving while drunk is illegal.
Right. Yeah, that's okay.
So you should be held accountable for driving while drunk, not right. for being drunk.
Right.
Right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's what people don't get. There's an old AA joke where guy says two people are locked up in county jail. They both got pulled over for drunk driving. And one's alcoholic and one's not an alcoholic. And the way you can tell is the non-alcoholic says, oh, my God, I knew I had too much. I shouldn't have gotten behind the wheel. Oh, my God, I'm never going to do this again.
Right.
Oh, my God, I can't believe I'm in jail.
Right.
The alcoholic says, God damn it, I shouldn't have taken La Cienega.
Right. 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 Exactly right.
Okay, and that's who you're dealing with. And Dr. Johan or whatever his name is with his rats didn't have the alcoholic rats in
correct.
The cage.
Correct.
Oh, okay. So we're going to change the subject to
okay.
health and fitness.
Okay.
Karen Morgan is convinced you're on steroids, Drew.
No.
And
it's just
the
meat diet, the bacon diet.
I know. And
I'd love to do steroids.
You know, steroids are common in all places, needles used secretly, and then kind of goes on to ask about what we want to know she wanna know about Suboxone first, but then what are your thoughts on needle exchanges? So there's a whole bunch of stuff there
No steroids, I wish. I'm afraid to take testosterone even, which I would love to do also. Because I have prostate cancer. And in terms of needle exchanges.
Yeah, but tell everybody how come you look so good. Because you work out. You're kind of a workaholic, okay?
Workaholic.
And you're also a workaholic.
Workaholic,
so
yeah.
You work out to get over the fact that you work too much.
To get over the fact that I work?
Yeah,
yes, to help me.
It makes you feel better because
yeah,
you're always
better.
Tired.
Yeah, it makes me feel better.
But you're dealing with this meat thing. You really think you're going to keep it up?
I feel so good doing
it. Let's fill Doug in. Doug, do you know what the diet that Drew's on that's got him in this beautiful physical fitness?
His abs
at this
are like
age?
Washboards. He's
so,
60 years old.
So 60 years
Keto?
Yeah, how'd you know?
Keto carnivore, sort of.
How did he know that?
Because it's very popular.
I heard you say bacon diet.
Yeah, it's very popular.
I get fat because he's eating bacon all day.
Don't you die from cholesterol death?
My cholesterol's never been better.
Come on.
My LDL's, I'm on a statin, so my LDL is spot where it's supposed to be.
Is this a popular diet the health and fitness world, Doug?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Keto, paleo, vegan. I mean, like I said, whatever works for the individual. And, you know, I know a lot of people have had success with keto, people who have had success with being vegan. It's kind of like recovery. You got to do what works for you. And then if it's not working, change it up. But if it's working, keep doing it.
That's exactly right.
Because, well, I'll tell you why. Because I've done certain things. When I got sober, everybody was vegan. And so I wanted to be healthy, so I went vegan. I got sick and anemic, and I was whatever.
Yeah.
Then luckily I had health insurance. I go to this doctor. He goes, my blood wasn't right, right? And he said, what are you eating? What are you doing? I said, well, I'm doing a vegan thing. My girlfriend's vegan. And he goes, well, you know, veganism for everybody. That's what he said.
Right.
Have you had your blood tested?
Me?
He asked me if I had my blood tested to see if I processed. So he said, where are you getting your protein from? And I said, from, what is that, tofu? And he goes, well, you're not getting it.
That's not enough.
So not every diet is right for every person.
Right.
Correct.
Right?
And he gets a colonoscopy every year, so he can just eat all the red meat he wants.
Oh, is that the big fear?
Colon cancer,
yeah.
I mean, that's what they say.
How did this diet become so the thing of the day, Doug, if you're living on the front lines of it? Why is it so popular?
Well, because when you really eat, you know, a lot of protein and a lot of fat and limit your carbs, you know, you burn more fat and your body fat does reduce. And that's why I heard, you know, Drew saying about Drew's abs and stuff like that. And that's like one of the more popular things is, you know, when you limit your carbohydrate intake.
And carbohydrates are just no bread. You don't eat any bread?
No bread. No
fruit.
No fruit?
Yeah.
I know.
Oh, come on.
What?
I'd rather be fat like me and have fruit.
You're not fat. He looks good on camera. He likes to be in shape, and he likes
but
to get.
But don't you
like
love fruit? Watermelon.
Watermelon. And I'll eat it once in a while, but I'm not. But I try not to eat any carbohydrates. They get
Once you stop eating the carbohydrates, you don't crave them anymore.
You don't miss them, and I feel I haven't felt this
don't
good
you
in
miss
a long
this,
time.
Oh, you
he
get
was
the
starting
salt
to get
from
kind of
else.
A belly, you know, and that's not good for heart disease. That's not.
Yeah,
good
I'm convinced that the main advantage of this keto diet is the fact that it eliminates this organ here at the central obesity we call it,
the pancreas,
and that is what is an inflammatory organ, and it's getting rid of that has a significant health benefit.
I just hope it doesn't hurt his heart. But okay, so. Somebody on here, Teresa Patton, she's a regular. She's a diabetic and wondered about keto.
No.
Because diabetics have to have a specific diet.
Yeah. You have to, because you're managing your insulin. And maybe there's a doctor out there that can give you a modified diabetic diet, but.
Do you eat ice cream?
No. But he's introducing vegetables more, and like I'm cooking more like, spaghetti squash, and he eats a little bit of squash and stuff like that.
You know,
the
carnivore
part.
Thing went over the top with Sean Baker, who's a guy, is an orthopedic surgeon who eats tremendous amounts of meat every day and only meat, and he is this world-class athlete now. And then Jordan Peterson, Jordan Peterson is?
Well, I know the guy we had here, you and
Vinny
Adam's friend.
Vinny
says no bread.
Vinny.
And I like, Doug, I like messages that stick in your head. This guy, Vinny, came here and said, bread kills you. And I was like, holy shit. Okay. Now, every time I look at bread, I go, that could kill me. Yeah. I think that's a good way to alter,
bad.
To make people question bread.
No starch,
just like
no brain.
We made people question cigarettes.
Yeah.
Just like we make people question sugar, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so this is just a reaction to that. Because if you're not getting, isn't bread in everything? Isn't grain in everything?
Yeah, but bread is cheaper than meat. Like if you want to eat all meat, it's very expensive. So a lot of people eat a lot of bread and it makes them overweight. And then they get diabetes and they eat, McDonald's or whatever because
I was at McDonald's last night. Don't shoot down McDonald's.
I went to McDonald's yesterday. I'm on a diet, but I'm watching my calories. And it was a dollar. It was like. $1.63. I got a hamburger and a Diet Coke, just because
yeah,
it was
they have
only
a new thing
calories.
where the drinks are only a dollar.
And when
he
said it was $1.63, I went, really? That's it? I felt so cheap. Oh my God.
Can't you make it $2.12 so I feel better?
It's why I know there's not hunger in this country. You can
for $1.63
for $2.50, you could easily get a day's worth of calories.
It was 400 calories for one double hamburger, regular hamburger with cheese.
Is that a lot or less?
Well, that's like my allotment for lunch or I was really hungry because I didn't have, and I was like, oh, I have to get on the freeway. I want to just stop and get something.
Let's see what the physical fitness guy, Doug. How much is your calorie intake per day?
I mean, I honestly don't, unless I'm really like trying to like either like, get leaner for the summer or put on weight for the winter or whatever, however I'm doing it. I don't really track as much. I'm kind of eating intuitively more now.
What's a What's a good number for me? What should my number be? Because in my mind, it's 2,500. Is that too much?
It depends on the makeup, too.
I mean, how much do you weigh?
180. 510.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know off the top of my head the exact math, but I know they say, like, I think you multiply, just a general rule of thumb, to multiply your weight times like 12 or 14 or something like that. That's what I learned through my certification, just the easy rule of thumb. Oh, and then you can get more detail through that.
So, yeah, 2,500.
That's about right.
Right?
Yeah.
But the problem is you got to pay close attention because there's stuff that doesn't look high calorie that's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Like a large Jamba juice is like 650 calories. And people don't realize that, right? So, and then what are some more questions? I like the health and fitness questions.
Okay, you like those? Okay. Oh, Drew, your biggest fan is on here, Mickey Guzu. Mm-hmm. Let's see here. Let's see. Da-da-da-da-da. There was kind of a long addiction question. What's the best foods for anti-inflammatory diet?
Acai.
Well, I would argue that...
Acai and turmeric.
I think those are good things, but I would argue, we'll let Doug answer in a second, but I think the most important thing as it pertains to this, to the topic of inflammation, and again, we really don't know what we mean when we say that. We think we know what we mean, but
my leg aches.
No. That's not what they're talking about. They're talking about the endothelial lining of your arteries.
I'm talking about pain.
That's different. So from an inflammatory standpoint, I think the really significant thing is, again, this midline fat distribution. That there's just a tremendous correlation with this endothelial function and getting rid of this as much as possible. The fat of the
middle. And so it's not the cholesterol as they had thought for years.
Well,
so
it
much.
Is. The
not
story's
as
a,
much
the
as
the story's getting more and
think.
More complicated. Okay. That's all. Yeah. Doug, okay. Go ahead. Let Doug answer.
I mean, I know. I agree. I think there's a lot more research coming out that with how important it is to keep your midline, very lean, and how like a lot of our problems are causing our gut.
Yep.
And just making sure that we're keeping that as healthy as possible. And I think It's there's no general rule of thumb, I don't think, for every single one person. Like,
right.
Bob, you were talking about cholesterol. Like, if Drew's never had issues with his cholesterol.
No, I have. I'm on a statin.
Oh, okay.
But on this diet, my readings on the statin have never been better. Never been better.
So
my HDL is up.
So
yeah.
That's the complication is it's the meat diet with the statins. Somehow,
well, there are people
it's
trying,
working good.
There, if you read all the literature, that we interviewed a guy on Swole Patrol. What was that guy's name, Susan? The engineer that was working on the cholesterol.
Oh, yeah. I can't remember his name, but I know you're talking
he's
about.
Got a whole Twitter feed going on this and trying to convince me to get off the statin. He thinks I'll get even better off the statin.
Yeah, but I don't want you to die.
I'm not really.
Well, you don't really
the doctor
die.
Can let you do that.
Yeah.
So what about the pain inflammatory?
Oh, Dave
though?
Feldman.
Let's talk about the inflammation. So
well, that's
it's
just
not
aging.
That my
that's
leg is
aging.
Inflamed. It's
well,
not that my
joints,
nerve is
your
like there.
Are,
I have pain, tremendous pain right there.
Yeah, our soft tissue and our joints don't function the same way as we age.
Turmeric doesn't make that go down?
Yeah, that's better.
Yeah.
That's good. But Doug, go ahead. You answer it.
I'm glad I'm not wasting hundreds of dollars on turmeric.
Well, I mean, and I think you would just kind of listen to your body. If certain foods, like, I mean, one of the things they were saying for years is like sugar is the thing that causes inflammation or dairy. I mean, and I'm not saying that but you just got to pay attention. If you start feeling achy from eating like a big bowl of ice cream, you might be like, well, maybe I should stay away from the sugar and the dairy. And I think a lot of the inflammation can be, aided with working out. You know what I mean?
Because right. I was going to say, do you work out, Bob?
No, I got two small kids.
I
go 100 miles an hour every day.
I feel you.
But here's
I have 3 podcasts. I feel your pain.
Yeah, no, I go. We were at Disneyland this week. We were at Laguna. Now we're going back.
You're active, but you're not building muscle. And
it doesn't stop from 6:15 a.m. until 9 o'clock.
Right, but you need to build muscle around your joints so that they don't get
carrying a 40-pound baby around helps you.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I agree.
But I am watching my center because I notice if you just I try to shorthand. I think Doug and I talked about this. I have a friend who's like the nutritionist, you've met him, Khalil, right? I said, just make it simple.
Khalil Rafati.
Yeah. I said, just make it simple for me. He said, don't eat processed food.
Yeah, that's a good
right?
one.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good rule. If everyone lived like that, they wouldn't look like pod people. They wouldn't.
Yeah.
Aren't we changing the human species with grain and carbohydrates? Aren't we changing the stature of the human species? And I'll give you the example. Watch the movie Kyanaskatsi. You love New York City, Drew. Mm-hmm. Remember Kyanaskatsi? It was this documentary with just music, Philip Glass music, and showed human beings going in different directions all over the planet.
I did not.
In 1980. Great movie.
Interesting.
It shows Grand Central Station in 1980.
Mm-hmm.
You don't recognize the humankind in 1980.
Right,
everybody
so
is normal size.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
What happened between 1980 and 2000
when the obesity epidemic? Well, there's several things. Corn syrup.
Corn syrup.
Got involved with everything. Am I wrong, right or wrong about that, Doug?
Doug,
corn
syrup?
Oh, you're 100%
syrup?
Right.
Corn,
yeah,
syrup.
Corn syrup.
Corn syrup.
Why can't we outlaw corn syrup then?
Hold on, there's more.
Okay.
The movement from tallow to the vegetable fats, which are carcinogenic, and the government mandated that.
What is that? So grains?
No. So when we fry your French fries at McDonald's, they don't use meat oil anymore. They use vegetable oil, which is dangerous, but they do it because the government requires it. And the other correlated thing,
I thought that was a cholesterol thing. I remember that. That was McDonald's French fries.
Yep.
They said somehow it's causing cholesterol.
Correct, but they're
wrong.
The meat grease. Wrong. And the other thing.
Well, then they were wrong. Change it back.
The other thing is
too late.
Mom's no longer in the home. Mom's working. That's also
correlated. So we're eating more fast food.
So kids snack and eat fast food.
Right, right. So those are the three things I know of. Doug, do you know of other things?
No, I mean, I would just, you know, the vegetable oils, the peanut oils, the deep frying and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, the government controls so much of the food industry, and it's just kind of like there's corn in everything.
Yep.
Like, I don't remember the exact percentage of it, but I mean, there's a lot more corn and stuff than we think. And the corn industry is just is insane. And I think kids are less active now, too. I think
they're
on their phones, they're on their iPads, they're on their computers, and they're not like outside playing. And, you know, like one of my clients was telling me the other day, one of his friends like locks his kid, their kids outside from 9 to 5. And they're like, you know, on the weekend, it's like, you're outside, go outside and play and come in at 5. And, you know, I think we need to get back to doing some of that stuff.
Corn-fed beef.
Drink water out of the hose like a man.
Yeah.
Right.
So, top man.
I got a cheat sheet for those at home.
Okay.
All you do is, my whole house, sometimes you can walk in and there's 4 people on technology.
Yeah.
Right? Uh-huh. You can, as the adults in the house, say, hey, we're going to go. No, but that's too hard.
Okay.
You just disconnect the Wi-Fi. You disconnect the power of the Wi-Fi.
Wait, let me get this right.
Oh, my God. What happened?
Let me get this right.
What happened?
Don't take the screens away. Do the attic thing. Manipulate
them. Lie.
No, because I don't know when's the last time you dealt with an 8-year-old. When you're taking technology away from an 8-year-old, the first thing he wants to know is when he gets it back.
Yeah.
And then it's just a negotiation. It's like, that's worse junkiedom than just go take the power out of the modem and go, oh, my God, what's going on? What's going on? Then 2 hours later, plug it back in. I go, oh, they fixed it.
I like that. I'll do it.
So when we were talking about fats, well, this was a question earlier. Carolyn said, top fan, Carolyn. She said, coconut oil is the old CBD, magic potion.
Yeah, but people have vilified coconut oil. I use a little bit of coconut oil. What do you say, Doug?
I love coconut oil. I think it's great. I mean, they kind of vilified it because of the saturated fat, but you know, really, it's some of the MCTs in it are super, super healthy.
Yep, it's a great oil.
You cook with it.
Cook with it. Yeah, I mix it in with peanut butter sometimes, with almond butter rather, and eat it as a snack. It's a good for my diet. The thing I'm on, it's a good way to go.
Doesn't that sound yummy?
Oh God, it sounds so gross.
It's yummy.
Well, I like peanut butter. So.
What about? I got a question for you guys. What about the cotton candy ice cream from Rite Aid? Is that good for you? Because I go through a tub of that in like 3 days. I love that stuff.
That's why your hair's red.
So funny.
Pink.
It might make your knees hurt more.
Yeah, it does make my knees hurt. Right.
Someone says wants to know if apple cider vinegar helps lose weight.
It's in all the hippie drinks now.
Yeah, I don't
why is it so popular?
It's a good anti-inflammatory.
It tastes horrible.
Yeah, I've been through several waves of enthusiasm for it. It's not as though it's life changing, even though they'll make those claims. Doug, you go ahead.
I mean, yeah, I've heard it's the anti-inflammatory thing. I heard it's good for your gut when you wake up in the morning to drink on an empty stomach.
Really?
I've seen it.
But I mean, I use it as like a salad dressing sometimes, you know, with stuff. But I don't really use it for the the gut health.
But those things that are like, what is the what's the drink you can get at every store that tastes awful?
Kombucha?
Kombucha. What's that? What in the hell is that?
A marketing scheme.
Doug, what is kombucha? What's in that? It tastes awful.
It's just for digestion and
it's like rotted milk or something.
Isn't there
it's like bacteria and
isn't there apple cider in it? It tastes awful.
It's like microbiomes and
I don't know, they have
a
little bit
section.
Of alcohol in it too.
Yeah.
There's alcohol in
that's
it?
That's probably why they sell so
very
much.
Popular in the 12-step world.
I have a funny story about vinegar. I was cleaning the coffee pot one day and I had the water sitting in the coffee maker, and I guess the morning Teresa poured it in the thing, and I went to get my coffee
had
and I
vinegar
took a big
in it?
Well, the water was all full of vinegar and I took a swig of my coffee and it was like
tastes like kombucha.
I just spit it out and I thought it was the milk, and then I realized it was because I just drank a big mouthful of vinegar. So not my favorite thing.
No, that's healthy for you, Susan. That's what it is.
I didn't know.
In Eagle Rock, they charge $8 for that.
Anyways, here's a good one.
He's moving.
I have osteoarthritis with lumbar stenosis, arthritis in knee and foot.
Yeah.
So my question is, what foods would be best to eat to keep joint inflammation down?
I mean, you have a disorder, right? You have at least two different disorders there. So the osteoarthritis is the erosion of the surface of the joints. That is something that happens to most people. It has somewhat of a genetic component to it, somewhat of a use component to it. Diet, I mean, other than turmeric, things like that, it's not a big diet thing. And you have lumbar stenosis, which is a wholly other phenomena that is also genetically based. And I know of no diet that can help that. I mean, CBD oils may be useful for these things.
Mm-hmm.
CBD.
So they say.
Yeah. So you might.
Turmeric.
Yeah. Turmeric, CBD. These are things, you know, anti-inflammatories, obviously, but use that under doctor's sort of care. All of these things, really.
CBD oils come in big time.
It's the new Bitcoin.
It is Bitcoin.
Yeah, it is the new Bitcoin.
There's gold in there.
Yeah.
So Karen, the one who thought you were on steroids, she also apologized. Dr. Drew, do you think maybe depression and addiction and inflammation are all intertwined?
They are intertwined, for sure. It's really interesting. I'm going to do a partially examined life podcast on the philosophy of suicide tomorrow. I don't know when it's going to air. But I was thinking a lot about depression and other things. And I was talking to a friend of mine. I'm not going to name him. But he said, he's this guy, and he goes, you know, I woke up in the middle of the night last night. I have no mood problems. I suddenly was suicidal.
Oh,
and it turned out he had an endocrine disturbance.
Oh,
and it was
brain,
affecting,
blood,
yeah, it was
blood.
A brain thing. And it was affecting, it was creating these suicidal thinking, even though he was like, where is that coming from? I don't want to kill myself. I don't feel depressed. But the point is there are lots of inflammatory / endocrine / neurobiological processes can affect mood and how we regulate emotions.
But don't you think, like both you and I, it was your birthday a couple months ago, and every time it's your birthday, I think, oh, mine's coming. like we
mine
got
too.
Way more years behind us than we got in front of us.
Yeah.
Right?
Thank you for
and,
that.
But that's the beauty of it. There's a thing. I want to make it to 80. I know you want to make it beyond 80. I
no,
don't want to make 80's good. I think everybody consciously is not prepared to talk about that, face that, look at that. So when you start to have pain and depression, you know, it's at an age, usually 50s. How old was the guy who woke up in the middle of the night saying he wanted
to
kill himself?
But
he has brain 50s, things. There's something about it that we don't talk enough about. Life and aging
100%.
And death. We just don't talk about
it. I'm bothered by it because I deal with it all the time. All the time with the patients I deal with. And it's all hidden. It's all hidden.
I don't expect you to worry about it, Doug. It's just me and Drew
and no one prepares
right
for
now.
It. People like an 85-year-old will come in with a new tumor or cancer or something. I don't understand it. I never had this before. It's like, yeah, I know. You're 85 and now you have it.
Yeah.
Now you have myeloma. It's like, what do you mean you never had it before? They're shocked when they get a new problem at, you know, 85, 90.
Well, I talk about I want to have a quality of life for at least 20 years, especially when you have young kids and you're as old as me. I want a quality of life. I'm going to do everything I can to have a quality of life. But if I make it to 80, which means Elvis will be 31, that's a good time to go.
He's old enough.
You know what I mean?
He'll be like, yeah.
You really, I do consciously think about that.
But you might.
Sid will be 25, but she's got
all. I'll tell you what happens. You start thinking about grandkids.
Oh, yeah, they're going to.
Yeah.
Yeah, jeez.
Don't do that.
Sorry.
Oh, God, no.
Thinking about that.
Sorry.
I'll have grandkids born when I'm 75.
So, Doug, do you have to catch a train?
Are you heading to Baltimore?
Not, I'm good.
You got a little time. I don't want to hold you.
Don't you wish, like in living in California, I don't know if you've ever lived here before, there's nothing like, you can just be in New York City and hour and 40 minutes be in Baltimore,
oh,
D.C.,
yeah.
And in an hour and 10 you can be in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
There's nothing like that.
Takes an hour to get to Culver City.
An hour to get to Culver City.
12 miles away.
Right?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I think
get Drew started, okay?
Every time I see something like that, I think, God, he's really going from the greatest city in the world, in my opinion, to one of the greatest metropolitan areas, the Baltimore, D.C. area. I love Baltimore. I know there's a lot of bad talk about Baltimore. What part of Baltimore do you live in, Doug? I think we talked about it.
I'm in Lutherville, so I'm like 20 minutes north of Baltimore, the city.
Out by the airport? Is that out by the airport?
No, more towards like, I don't know. I mean, horse country kind of.
Horse country.
Where I live.
Oh, yeah. It's all. Yeah, you literally.
Well, good. You're not in the slums.
No, but Baltimore's got some great areas. Come on. It's got some great areas.
My brother used to live up there. So.
Good?
Yeah, he worked there.
All right.
Well, listen, I have a question, though. For you, I had a question for you, but I forgot.
Oh my goodness!
I'm sorry.
So I think we got to kind of wrap things up here.
Yeah.
I know we've had kind of a long day, but it was a really successful day. I want to know. Oh, I know what it was. I guess I'm assuming Doug was a guest on Don't Die podcast.
No, I just did the interview for the book.
Oh, you were.
Yeah,
we got to finish. I got to get one question from you.
I don't
need
that.
You
are a persistent MF-er, I'll tell you that.
See, I was unaware of this. I just got your referral from Amy Dreschner, whose show is coming up very soon.
Right.
Next week, or maybe the week after.
Is Amy how you and I got hooked up, Doug, or how did we get hooked up? How'd you get my phone number?
I just saw. You gave it to me on Instagram.
Oh, okay. I give away.
I didn't even know you.
Whatever.
I had no idea you had Instagram, Bob.
No, but here's the funny thing. At the end of Bob and the Monster, if you watch all the way to the end, it says, Bob's cell phone number is, call this number if you want to talk. And hundreds of people have called me.
Wow.
But you got to watch it past all the credits.
That's how you know they watched the whole thing.
They probably nodded out.
Woke up at the end.
No wonder I never got a hold of you. You're busy talking to film fans.
Yeah. All right, so call me back, text me, and I'll finish up the interview. But it was interesting. I knew what he was doing the moment he started telling me about it. That's cool. I don't want to see everything from my perspective, but it is so parallel. There's always a bottom. There's always a mentor involved. Yep. There's always a willingness to change.
Always a moment
of desperation to change.
Desperation, yeah.
And
one of the other important things I was trying to showcase is once you get sober, you got to replace your life with healthy things.
Yep.
You know, and Bob, I know you don't physically exercise, so to speak, but you said you walk around with the beach with your kids, you're active,
you're not sitting
at home, eating that Rite Aid ice cream all the time.
But it is, there's contemplating change, preparation of change, but maintenance of change is something that people don't appreciate. People think you're going to convince somebody to change,
that's
and they're
the
just going to change.
That's the thing.
But the maintenance of change is the hardest part. This is how we always tell people who are trying to stay sober. Yeah, anybody can stop doing drugs, but staying stopped, good luck. That's very hard.
And mine was, and I talk about it a lot, is that I became obsessed with sobriety and the stuff, Doug, that you're talking about. How, what makes people change? What, yeah, what is sobriety? What is recovery? How did they come up with rehab? Yeah. What is rehab? Who invented it? I became, like, I have my OCD. I became obsessed with that,
yeah,
the way I had been obsessed with music. And it's really carried me a long ways to even today. Like, I want to know, what are the parallels that he's found in these 30 people he's interviewed?
I can't wait to read the book. Yeah. That's The Heart of Recovery, right?
Yeah.
That's the book, that book.
When's it come out, Doug?
Yeah, I'll say in March, but I should have like a, my copy editor is going through a lot of it now. So I should have a final book sometime in, you know, December. I'll send it to you guys.
Please. Okay, I cool. love it. Thank you.
All right.
All right, man. The book again.
Till next time.
The Heart of Recovery.
The Heart of Recovery.
All right, buddy. Thanks,
all
Doug.
All right. Great Have a job. Safe trip.
See you, man.
Thank you.
Happy right. trails, Thank you. Everybody.
And we'll see you everybody next time. One of the most crucial components of addiction recovery is accountability. Part of what makes addiction so difficult is the inability to self-regulate. Now, this is especially problematic for those in outpatient recovery or pain management program. And while the facilities require regular urine tests to ensure compliance, frequently the actual tests are not even observed. This led to an epidemic of falsified samples where patients either use someone else's urine or widely available synthetic urine. The result is a lot of addicts carry right on using undetected, and they get none of the benefits from treatment. The only objective test we have for addiction is the urine screen. Now, recently, I learned about a new solution that virtually eliminates the possibility of faking tests, even in facilities where they are unobserved. This is called ToxProtect, a DNA-verified drug test and lab service that provides 100% sample authenticity. ToxProtect was created by Genetox Labs, can be used in place of any standard urine drug test. It starts with simple one-time cheek swab to establish the patient's identity. Once submitted, each subsequent screening uses DNA testing to verify that that sample matches the patient. And additionally, ToxProtect screens for synthetic urine and irregular values that would indicate dilution or other adulteration. In other words, this pretty much guarantees accountability. I'm excited to see this service being used, and I think it will significantly improve an addict's chances for successful recovery. I'm going to be talking more about Genetox Labs and ToxProtect on future shows. Thankfully, ToxProtect is being used by more and more facilities every day. Be sure to ask for it by name wherever you or your loved one is receiving care. To get more information or share it with your facilities, go to drdrew.com/ToxProtect. That is drdrew.com/ToxProtect. All right, that's about it for this episode of This Life. Check us out at KBC, being Lawrence Avon, 790 Midday Live Talk Radio, Monday to Friday. You can also tune in every day live via the magic of the internet at kbc.com. If you miss it, we've made it simple for you to find all the shows at drdrew.com, the Adam and Dr. Drew podcast, the Sing One I Do By Myself, Dr. Drew podcast, This Life, of course, with Bob Swole Patrol, Mike Cantho, and his new health and fitness podcast. You can find us on Twitter at This Life Podcast, at Dr. Drew, Dairy W, at Rehab Bob Forrest, and of course, our lovely producer at First Lady of Love. I think I know who that is. If you love this show, please subscribe and tell a friend. We appreciate it when you do. We'd love to hear your feedback as well. Send us a message. Join the email list at drdrew.com, drdrew.com/contact. You'll also get a weekly email from us on that. While you're at it, at drdrew.com, please support our sponsors by clicking through the banners. We only advertise products that I can get behind. So thank you for supporting them, those that support us. And thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.